Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the swamped voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello there, Matthew.
Hello, Richard. How is one?
Very well. Swamped is a good word I would use. Of course, January is here, which means the window is open and lots of goalkeeping movement, which means lots of conversations.
This is the kind of stuff that football fans often find fascinating about the world of football, don't they? What's it like for you right now dealing with all these goalkeepers moving from club here to there? There's managers you're speaking to, there's players you're speaking to. It's all going on.
Do you know what? You tend to find, and it's always the first week, 10 days of January that it happens, where a lot of the loan agreements that will be for goalkeepers, certainly League One, League Two, obviously a couple in the Championship as well, their agreements are coming to an end. So then there's always a decision as to whether they're going to continue for the rest of the season. If they're not, then of course you'll see other goalkeepers coming in. It may be that a couple of goalkeepers are leaving to go to different clubs. So you get this whole merry-go-round of goalkeepers going here, there and everywhere. And for so many of these clubs, as much as they'll have targets, they'll have hit lists, they'll have a good idea as to the goalkeepers they like, of course it's not always possible due to finances or situations, etc., etc. So things tend to be really fast moving and quite reactive. So it has been, it's been a crazy week or so.
Different landscape now as well, isn't it? Especially in the lower leagues. You mentioned finances there. Goalkeepers and players, for that matter, tend not to in League One and League Two, tend not to move for money these days. It's very much like you said, they get to the end of their contracts, and whether that's assessed in January or the summer, players just move from club to club now without really there often being a fee associated.
Yeah, it's changed hugely. And certainly talking about the goalkeeping market in particular, certainly with COVID and with everything that's happened over the last year or so, it's a completely different landscape to what it was even this time last year, you know. And you see so many of the clubs in League One, League Two that are looking to loan goalkeepers. One of the reasons being that this cap's been brought into League One and League Two. So they're having to try and stay under the cap. And there are so many opportunities for these clubs to potentially loan a Premier League goalkeeper at next to nothing. I mean, you look at the likes of Man United, they're carrying 7 or 8 pro goalkeepers. Similarly with Man City, similarly Chelsea. So there's a lot of opportunity for these League One, League Two clubs to get a Premier League goalkeeper. And of course, with that, you've got pros and cons. You know, a lot of these goalkeepers will be very young. It'll be their first loan, potential that they may make those mistakes, those early mistakes that you would expect a young goalkeeper to make. But the big positive for these clubs during these cash-strapped times is that they can get young goalkeepers for next to nothing, which, you know, obviously at the moment it is crazy times that we're living in. And for a lot of these clubs that don't have the budget to potentially go out and buy a goalkeeper or pay big wages, it tends to be the goalkeepers where they're looking to save money.
Big time for you as well, personally, I suppose, because you mentioned young goalkeepers there that you are having to move on and potentially really making the decisions, not for them, but advising them with those decisions. So there's a bit of pressure on you as well to make sure that you get the decision right. And also, you know, we talk a lot about psychology on this podcast, making sure that their mindset is right with the decision that they make.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my day-to-day, because I do get a lot of people ask me, what do I actually do? Do we just do the podcast? Is this our full-time living? No, I mean, my day-to-day is it's having to know everything that's going on in the goalkeeping market. So I've got alerts coming through all day as to if anything happens, if a goalkeeper gets injured, if a goalkeeper moves, if a goalkeeper gets sent off, just knowing the movement of the market at all times and figuring out who could be the right fit where. So, you know, and it's one of the great things and one of the reasons we do this is the knowledge we have on every individual goalkeeper in the country. And I know there's a lot of the goalkeepers that listen into this on a week-to-week basis. You know, I do have a dossier on every pro goalkeeper in the country. I've got highlights of every pro goalkeeper in the country, so I can build an idea in my mind as to what goalkeepers fit which particular clubs, and then be able to make suggestions as and when I see that clubs do need goalkeepers. And thankfully, some of my suggestions have paid off.
Okay, good stuff. Well, we'll crack on because we've got plenty to talk about FA Cup third round weekend, but not before we deliver the customary contact details. If there's anything that you'd like to ask us, if there's anything that you've seen in the goalkeeping world, very easy to let us know at GK Union on Twitter. Our brand new number, 07503 673020, or email hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Okay, Richard, FA Cup third round weekend. You've got to love it. Often the day of the debut for many a goalkeeper, if not that, a first appearance of the season for many a goalkeeper. I'm going to list who I think either made their pro debuts or their debuts or their first appearances of the season so far. We've got Matthew Yates of Derby. These are pro debuts. William Dennis of Bournemouth. Akosh Anodi at Aston Villa. Slightly more extenuating circumstances, that one. And Ellery Balcombe at Doncaster. The debuts or the first appearances of the season were for Martin Dubravka. First game back from injury at Newcastle. Jack Butland at Crystal Palace. Will Norris at Burnley. Joe Day at Bristol Rovers. He'd only just come in on loan as well. Frankie Fielding, a first game since the first day of last season at Millwall. Dylan Phillips, he made his debut and a first start of the campaign at Cardiff. Jordan Smith with his first start of the season at Forest. And Jordan Archer made his Middlesbrough debut.
Fantastic. Yeah, you tend to find, you know, certainly now the way in which football has gone. Of course, cup games, and a lot of the teams do make the decision, a lot of the managers do make the decision that cup games will 100% be for those on the periphery. And certainly for goalkeepers, I think it makes sense. I personally think that with the amount of league games there are this season more than ever, with COVID having had the impact and the amount of games that are being clustered into a short space of time, you need to know that you've got another goalkeeper there or potentially two other goalkeepers there that can step in if needed. And if they're not getting game time at first team level, it's always going to be so, so difficult to replicate that in reserve teams, in under 23s or wherever it might be. So I think to have this opportunity to do that and to see a lot of the names you mentioned there, some fantastic goalkeepers who are getting their opportunity to show what they can do, it makes absolute sense to me.
With that, and I'm pretty sure we speak about this every single season as well when it gets to the third round stage, that often you do tend to find an error or a mistake or just something that perhaps wouldn't have happened if that goalkeeper had been playing week in, week out. We see that, don't we, essentially normally in the FA Cup.
Yeah, and there's reasons for it. I mean, one of the big reasons will be, and I'm sure most goalkeepers can attest to this, is that if you haven't played for a long time, regardless of what the situation is, and then you're thrown in for a game, you will feel or may well feel slightly more nervous than you ordinarily would if you're in the swing of it and you're playing week in, week out. So the nerves will be that little bit more because you haven't played in that environment for such a period of time. To get used to the pace of the ball, there might be that slight worry that, well, what if I don't get used to it straight away? What if I make that mistake early on, et cetera, et cetera? So that's one of the reasons for me, I think, is the fact there'll be that little bit more nervous energy, which really can go either way. And it very much depends on how the goalkeeper is able to deal with that. And the other bit is what I touched on before, is the fact that, of course, you haven't played a game at that pace or played in a first team, a game of that magnitude for quite some time. And it's so, so different. I can't go into this in enough detail that when you're playing in first team football at that level, it's night and day compared to playing under 23s or playing a reserve fixture at the training ground. It just does not compare at all. It's one of the biggest criticisms I know of under 23 football. I know a few people will disagree with me on this, but I remember playing, even my back end of playing at Brentford, I played in quite a few under 23 fixtures and I really enjoyed them because they were so comfortable. You're playing out all day. You're not necessarily having many aerial balls to deal with. And it was just a very simple game to play as a goalkeeper. Now, it might be very different for the outfield players, but certainly as a goalkeeper, it's very different. It's one of the reasons I highly recommend goalkeepers get on loan lower down in order to get that match experience playing men's football in games that mean something, because that will be far more similar to what you'll face when you do come in to play first team football. So naturally, of course, you're going to see errors. And I know that we've seen several this weekend.
One goalkeeper who wasn't replaced was Aaron Ramsdale at Sheffield United. They did bag their first win in 182 days at Bristol Rovers. But were you surprised that Chris Wilder kept Ramsdale in? Maybe it could have been a decision to take him out of the firing line, perhaps against Bristol Rovers. I mean, you look at this game and you think he didn't really have... I mean, did he have anything to gain from this? Did he have more to lose than he did to gain?
I think this is good management, personally, because I think when you've gone that many games without a win, it's just nice to pick up a win. It doesn't matter who it's against, doesn't matter how it comes about, but just to have that winning feeling. You walk off the pitch and you've won a game. Do you know what? Because, okay, had they have lost, how much worse can it get? I mean, they're bottom of the league. And I don't mean that in terms of personally for Aaron Ramsdale. I've given my thoughts on him and his performances before. But in terms of where the team's at, how much worse can it get? Even if they'd have lost this game, is that going to make him feel less confident than he does already? Like, surely, in terms of being a Sheffield United player, things are pretty bad right now. So I think actually to play that game, to walk off, have that winning feeling, there will be some positive there. And that's the reason for me, I think he's put him in the team. And I think it could well pay dividends, the fact that he's done that.
Commentary Corner. We are going with Commentary Corner a little earlier this week, Richard, because it was a funny weekend for goalkeeping and goalkeeping punditry. There was something in the water over at BT Sport Towers and BBC, I think. My word, I was aghast at some of the guff I was hearing from a whole host of pundits and presenters, for that matter. And I know that we bang this drum quite a lot, and I don't want this podcast to be purely about us digging out pundits, because we do sound like a bit of a broken record, and I guess it can just get a bit tiresome. And I don't want to nitpick, but on some of these occasions, I am going to nitpick. So we're going to merge this with some of the analysis as we go through. But I'm going to start with Michael Owen and Akos Onodi, who was the young goalkeeper that we've already spoken about, who played for Aston Villa in their defeat to Liverpool. Villa with a bunch of youngsters, an academy team really, an under-23 team playing against Liverpool. Now, Onodi played quite well, conceded four, but played quite well considering it was his professional debut. For the goal that he conceded inside the opening 5 minutes, the opener from Sadio Mane, Michael Owen at half-time said, "He's off the ground and he can't get any purchase. I think he'll wish his feet were planted so he could push up. But as I say, he was still in the air." Quite detailed, he's obviously looked at that. But then Onodi made a very good double save. And when he spoke about that at halftime, Michael Owen, he said, "How he keeps that out is beyond me." That's all he said.
I mean, look, let's try and take a positive from that, because the fact that he hasn't tried to break down the save, I don't mind that he hasn't tried to break down the double save in a way, because you mentioned how he's described the Mane goal. You know, there's a lot of thoughts I could give to that. I won't do that on this particular podcast, but certainly when it comes to the save, I don't mind that. You know, if it's just going to be a general comment like that, if he's not comfortable in going into detail as to what he did, how he did it, then that's fine. Just you know, give it high praise and then leave it at that. In terms of the save, and by the way, brilliant double save. It really was. For me, the first one, the fact that it's actually a very good parry, getting down to his left, full stretch, good palm, good area. Now, there's not a lot you can do when someone's coming in on the angle like that, but what he does so well, you look at the speed at which he gets up, gets himself into an excellent position and creates a good shape. Now, he's looked to react to the second ball. It's very interesting where the ball ends up, because there's an element of luck. Now, I don't say that to take anything away from the save, but purely in the fact that it's hit the inside of his arm, flashed across the goal line and obviously gone out the other side of the goal. A very unusual save, but a brilliant save nonetheless. But for me, it was more the fact, it was more the initial parry, the speed at which he gets up and the shape that he creates. And he earned his luck, because it's a fantastic double save. Obviously, in the end, they went down 4-1, but certainly lots of plaudits for him.
Just on that, before we move on, great performance from Onodi. And it's worth noting, and we put this out on Twitter, that he is only 18 months younger than Ian Melier at Leeds. Now, Melier seems to be dividing opinion amongst the Leeds faithful, but it does show, doesn't it, the faith that Marcelo Bielsa has in him.
It's huge. And in terms of development, you know, we talk a lot about how much you can gain from quality training, but how important it is to play games at the highest possible level. You know, you mentioned earlier about a lot of the goalkeepers that I work with. It's my biggest aim for each of them to get them out playing games as quickly as we can in order to taste that and to be able to improve that much more by doing that. And you actually look at some of the greats of the past and present, but the likes of Iker Casillas, great example, who got his chance so early at such a massive club and they stuck with him. And of course, you're going to develop at such a quick rate because you're being thrown in at the deep end. And now if you've got the mentality to deal with that, and you're able to learn with each setback that you're going to get, you're going to undoubtedly get, you just wonder how good Melier can be. I mean, give him 6-7 years of playing at this level, and no doubt at some point he'll move up to an even bigger club, no disrespect to Leeds, but, you know, one of the top four, top six. Then all of a sudden, you know, you might have one of the best goalkeepers in the world, given the grounding that he's getting at this age.
Oh, crikey. Leeds fans are quite powerful on social media, Rich. So hopefully there's not too many listening in to this podcast right now. But we'll go from Iker Casillas to Kiko Casilla, his Melier's replacement at Leeds United this weekend at Crawley. And it seems to be, if we're talking about the faith that Marcelo Bielsa has in Melier, it seems now that Leeds fans have little faith in Casilla. They lost at Crawley, quite convincingly so. Now, Martin Keown gave the classic, keeper should do better there. We know he should, for the first and second goals that Garcia conceded against Crawley. What are your thoughts?
First, yeah, I think that it's, the ball's moved a bit, it's fair to say. I don't think the technique on the dive is fantastic. It doesn't look the most fluid going to his left. And again, didn't really get the power in order to go full stretch on his left and get that firm hand on the ball. So I think he'll be disappointed with the first. I do feel sorry for him on the second. When I saw it, I thought that's a horrible looking goal. But that's not to say it's an error. And the reason I say that is effectively the fact that it's hit the divot, that we've all seen it hit and it has moved direction. It is effectively like a small deflection from 3 or 4 yards away. Now, if that had hit a player's heel and done that, then we're not saying it's a goalkeeping error. The fact that it's hit the turf and done that, we're then questioning, could the goalkeeper do better? But for me, he's gone for where he thinks the ball's going to go. It's only because it's an atrocious pitch that, of course, it then goes in the direction it does, at which point he's reacted to something completely different. Now, unfortunately for him, his body shape is such that it's kind of squirmed through him and gone in. But I don't think there's a great deal you can do to control that. But again, I make my initial point. It's a horrible looking goal, but for me, it's not an error.
Okay, well, continuing with commentary corner, the pièce de résistance for me was with the penalties that we saw at the weekend, the two penalty shootouts. And actually, before we do that, I want to touch on Jermaine Genus and his analysis of the David Brooks goal for Bournemouth in their win over Oldham. Ian Lawler, the on-loan Oldham goalkeeper. Genus said, "It seems strange. It takes a huge deflection, but the keeper just kind of like, it's like he tries to kick it and misses it, and it goes through his legs." Is it that much of a deflection, do you think?
Horrendous. I mean, I when I was hearing this, because then they showed the footage afterwards, I was like, oh dear, here we go. Then I've seen it, and I thought, he's got absolutely no chance. And I'm like, surely now they've seen it again, they'll correct themselves. But if anything, they all joined in. It was very, very strange. And I'm watching it, and you can imagine, mouth wide open, just waiting for someone to pipe up and actually challenge them. But they just didn't. And I kind of felt like that was going on all afternoon. And again, there was no goalkeeping pundits in the studio. So naturally, they were all teaming up with each other, and they all then soon followed the same idea. But yeah, just to break down the goal, you mentioned it, there was a deflection. He started moving to his left, and he's taken that big movement to his left for the initial shot. Deflection comes back in. If he saves it, it is a fantastic save. It'd be an incredible reaction. But watching it again, I don't think there is any possibility of saving it because of the fact that he's already made the move to the left. So it was very, very odd commentary.
Yeah, it did kind of set the tone for the day. And we don't want to keep harping on about we should have goalkeepers on the panel. There should be goalkeeper pundits. But with BT Sport Score, there's hundreds of them in there. They're having a party. Surely there is room for at least one goalkeeper. They kept going to Peter Walton. So they've got Peter Walton there, the ex-referee, to do his analysis of what's going on with regards to refereeing decisions. So it does seem strange with BT Sport Score because there are so many places there to be filled. Stuart McCall was one of those, filling in one of those places at the weekend. And Freddie Woodman made a very good save for Swansea. It was a penalty in their win over Stevenage. Stuart McCall, good save and in the bottom corner. But as we talked about earlier, go down the middle, aim for the keeper's chest, and you're back in the game. Any pen, if you miss, it's a bad penalty.
And so herein lies the problem, because he's doing it from his perspective. Okay, that's exactly what he would think if he had have done that, or if it was one of his teammates, because, of course, he was an outfield player. Now, I just want to touch on this because people listening in, the majority of you are goalkeepers, so you're very much on side with us when we talk about this. But, you know, you do get the odd person asked, well, why does it matter? Like, for me, there's a few different parts to this. One is that we've got so many people that criticize goalkeeping in the UK. Now, for me, if you're always getting on goalkeepers for things that aren't mistakes, then you imagine the kids that are watching that program. There'll be loads of them out there that could potentially be fantastic goalkeepers. Is anyone going to want to play in goal when you've got commentators just hammering goalkeepers over and over? I mean, how many compliments do they give to goalkeepers on that particular show? Very, very few. So that for me is one of the reasons that we're as passionate about this as we are, because I know in other countries, certainly in the likes of Italy, Spain, America in particular, being a goalkeeper is arguably, certainly in some countries, it is seen as the best position to play. You know, we all know how much fun it is in terms of training and how you work in order to improve what you do. But of course, when you're getting so much criticism and unwanted criticism, especially when the job's as hard as it is already, it just makes it that much more difficult. So you can imagine when we're watching this footage, we're hearing those comments and they're not giving the compliments when really they should be giving them. It was a great save from Freddie Woodman. Fantastic save. And again, the athleticism needed, the mentality needed to do something like that should be admired. So I appreciate that from an outfield perspective, you're looking at the penalty taker and you're giving them a bit of stick. That's fine. But you have to compliment in a big way what Freddie Woodman's done there.
So this smashing it down the middle thing, and I'm sure Troy Deeney might concur with this, but they then had the two penalty shootouts between Blackpool and West Brom and Burnley and MK Dons. Now the coverage was really good. Really good as they switched between both of them. But the running commentary just was not the best. They kept harping on about smashing it down the middle, shouting, look at the keeper, when David Button was using his tactics to deter the takers for Blackpool. Dale Stevens, now, Dale Stevens for Burnley did go down the middle. So they were kind of vindicated in what they were saying, but they all cheered. And Genus said that he predicted that Dale Stevens would go down the middle. So Chris Sutton then pipes up and says, how do you know that? And the goalkeeper doesn't. Karen Carney then chimes in and says, let's just see if they smash it and score. Stuart McCall comes in again and shouts, just smash it down the middle. At the end, Phil Bardsley steps up for the clincher for Burnley and he puts it in the corner. Lee Nichols, the MK Dons goalkeeper, stays central. Genus then shouts, you told him to stand still. You've done him. You've made him look like an idiot. It was just a circus from start to finish. And I just want to say as a disclaimer, I'm not calling out Karen Carney here. I know that she's been in the news recently and has received a lot of abuse on social media. That's not what I'm doing. I'm piling her in with Chris Sutton and Jermaine Genus and Stuart McCall. I'm just saying as a collective, the commentary wasn't the best.
But again, it's one-sided. You know, how often do you see that where it's effectively, you know, several people ganging up and they've all formed a certain perspective and there's no one there to challenge them or no one willing to challenge them. So all that happens, it gets bigger and bigger. Like, does going down the middle mean you score? No, I've saved. In fact, you know, without harping on about penalty saves I've made in the past, I remember three off the top of my head where I just stayed central and they were reasonably comfortable saves because I knew what the taker was going to do. Now, it just so happens that recently, you know, Troy Deeney's had a few that really were very, very close to being saved, but have crept in. So that kind of justifies what they're saying to an extent. And similarly here, there was one in the game between West Brom and Blackpool that's actually gone reasonably central. David Button has read it brilliantly, but the guy's just ever so slightly mishit it and it's gone to his left and it's gone in. So look, I think at some point soon, we're going to see more and more saves going down the middle because goalkeepers are standing still. You know, you've got three choices, left, right or central. And goalkeepers now are becoming braver and braver. They're standing central. So it is nonsense, complete nonsense, what they're saying. There's so many different ways of taking a penalty. It's getting easier for the takers, given that goalkeepers are getting penalised for next to nothing. So takers should score 70, 80, 90%, I would say, of penalties that they take, regardless of whether they go down the middle, go left, go right, or do the hop, skip and a jump and whatever they do. But this, again, is where then goalkeepers should then get huge plaudits for when they make the saves. The fact that Chris Maxwell's made three saves in that game and David Button's made a fantastic save down to his right. And you mentioned Lee Nichols, you mentioned Will Norris, again, making saves. There's no plaudits for the goalkeepers when they're making these saves. It's just criticism for the outfield players because they were outfield players.
Funnily enough, Richard, to finish on this, because I think we've done enough with Commentary Corner for this particular episode. But on the penalties, Sam Marquis on Twitter alerted us to the fact that Dion Dublin reckoned the penalties saved by Chris Maxwell were all saves he should be expected to make.
And there you go. And this is exactly why we do this particular section each week. I know we've done a little bit more today than normal, but this really did agitate me this whole weekend, really, of commentary. So we felt it was worth going into a little bit more detail. But again, and I've said this about other things as well, we're in dangerous territory if suddenly a penalty save is expected because there's so much more that goes into it. It is a case of being able to read what the player's going to do, not going too early, timing your dive perfectly. So even if the save looks reasonably comfortable, there were so many things that they cannot put into words. They haven't got the ability, the knowledge, and that's not their fault. They weren't goalkeepers. They don't know what the goalkeeper's done in order to make that penalty save. So to say that it's a save they should make, again, dangerous territory. And where are we ever going to get a compliment?
Okay, moving on. Let's move on, shall we? Elsewhere in the FA Cup third round this weekend, 100 up for Kepa at Chelsea. That's 100 appearances for him now at the club. He nearly, very nearly saw one sneak in from Adam Phillips. It was 0-0 at the time in Chelsea's win over Morecambe, their eventual win over Morecambe. But can you imagine the headlines if that one had crept in?
Yeah, he would have got abused. But you know, I want to give him credit for this because he's taken up a very aggressive position for the cross. You know, you do a snapshot just as the cross is being taken and he's a good 3 or 4 yards out, which is what I'd recommend for a lot of young goalkeepers. Be aggressive. Can you affect the cross? Can you come and claim the cross? If not, retreat to your line and make the save. Now, in theory, your position should always be as advanced as it can possibly be without the risk of conceding at the near post. Now, credit to Phillips. It's an incredible strike. He's drilled it into that near post with pace. But a big well done to Kepa because he managed to get back, readjust And in the end, how he's kept it out, I don't really know. It's a bit of juggling on the line, and he's just about managed to hold on to it as well. So I actually want to give Kepa some credit here, because I think the position was okay, maybe even slightly too advanced. You might say that's fair enough. But the way in which he's managed to get back and have the calmness of mind to actually keep hold of the ball and be able to manipulate it in such a way so it doesn't go over the line and hold on to it, it's very, very good. But if that goes in, you're right. He would have been getting pelters.
Okay, Mark Halstead, the Morecambe goalkeeper, did concede 4, but we have to flag a very good double save he made to deny first Kai Havertz and then Christian Pulisic. Moving on to the Bet365 Stadium, Stoke losing 4-0 at home to Leicester. Michael Saville sent us in a sweet side volley from Kasper Schmeichel. We've got to talk about this.
Yeah, it's the thing of beauty. This is a really good game. Leicester look very, very good. You've got an improving Stoke side. I know we touched on Joe Bersick a lot in this show, but he made several good saves and Leicester were dominant. They were rampant. And actually, this bit of footage, when I saw it, we talk about Kasper Schmeichel a lot on this show as well, and rightly so, I think. You know, he's been very, very consistent again. And in this game, excellent again. And this particular moment for me sums up where he's at the moment. The speed at which he was able to gather the ball and distribute it out to the right winger in the way that he did, it was just how fluid it was. Now, as a goalkeeper, and we'll talk about this quite often, that the ball will be at your feet and you might see something. If you hesitate for a split second, it's not there anymore. Look, how many times have you had it where you've got the ball at your feet and you know that if you had the ability just to zing it to the left winger, the right winger, or have that side volley in behind in order to put your team on the attack that quickly, but you might just hesitate. You might go for the safe option. You might roll it out, or you might just put it down on the floor and kick it. But to actually have the ability to see it and execute it all in one motion like he did. And again, that's why he's considered one of the very best in the Premier League.
Yep. Okay, over to Ewood Park and the aforementioned debutant Ellery Balcombe. A very good double save in Doncaster's win against Blackburn. Funnily enough, this is what they flagged on Match of the Day. Dion Dublin said, wow, he's got a bright future ahead of him. Gabby Logan was waxing lyrical about the double save. But you've noticed something within this. It's incredible, isn't it? We cry out for praise. And then as soon as we see praise, we go, maybe that's slightly misjudged.
Well, no, do you know what I'll say? It is a very, very good double save. Firstly, just to say, delighted for Ellery that he's got the loan to Doncaster. Great opportunity for him. Of course, heard so much about him in the under-21 squad so often, and really, really highly rated goalkeeper. So I'm really excited to see how he gets on. And this was an excellent double save. It was just the first save. When you see it, my thinking is that he's slightly unsighted, because if you were to take this in isolation, it wouldn't be flagged up ordinarily, because it kind of looks like he's almost gone past the ball. The ball's come back in on him slightly. He's made the move to his right. Then once he's realised the ball's coming back inside, he's got no choice but to just parry it down in front of him. And again, the speed at which he readjusts to make the second save is phenomenal. And it ends up being a brilliant double save. I suppose the question I pose is that if the second one goes in, do people then question the first save? Now, I think it'd be harsh if they did, because my thinking, and from what I could see, is that he's slightly unsighted and he's had to go that little bit further to his right in order to see it. And actually, the first one is also a very good save. But this is the point we're making, that for whatever reason, this is the save they decide to go to town on and say is fantastic, yet a slight difference. They score that rebound, and who knows? They could have been blaming him for this. So a big well done to Ellery for making his debut, making a brilliant double save, and most importantly, a huge well done for stepping in, keeping a clean sheet, and a victory on his debut. Brilliant.
Yeah, two good saves from Mansfield's Marek Stek to almost keep Cheltenham at bay. The Robins did win out winners eventually in that one, coming from behind. And a top spread from Dan Bentley in Bristol City's 2-1 win over Portsmouth to deny Jordi Hiwula right at the death.
Yeah, this was a classic Bentley for me, where ball comes to the far post. Great decision to come, great decision to spread. And we always talk about your shape at point of impact. If you pause this the moment the ball struck, he's managed to get to within about a yard, arms spread wide, big barrier that he's created. And in the end, it's a fantastic save. There's a little bit of Schmeichel-esque in this, a star jump of sorts. But yeah, excellent decision, excellent execution.
Have to mention the Lee Nicol saves for MK Dons, a save from Ashley Barnes and Joel Mbungo, and a double save from Matej Vidra in extra time. He also saved the first penalty in that shootout, which they did, of course, eventually lose. But Bernd Leno, a very good save from Andy Carroll, again at the death in this one. This kept Arsenal in their tie with Newcastle, and Dale England tweeted us and referenced the fact that he nearly, very nearly, had his head knocked off by Andy Carroll in that rebound. Great adjustment after the initial shot was skewed. Real good bravery.
It really was, yeah. I mean, Andy Carroll's had a real swipe, hasn't he? If that had caught him, it could have been dangerous. But yeah, no, this is an excellent save. And you know what? You mentioned the time of the game, and I do think that's important, because how many times have we had it, or have keepers had it? And again, you guys listening in, you may relate to this, where you know there's only 10 minutes left in the game, 5 minutes left in the game. You know, if you're playing in stadiums that have a clock and you can see it ticking down, do you start to feel a little bit more nervous when you get towards the end of the game? Now, logically, we all know that you should play and feel the same regardless of what minute of the game you're playing in. But of course, when you get towards the end, it can happen that you're thinking, oh, if I make a mistake now, that could cost us. Or similarly, if I make a fantastic save, that could save us. Well, of course, this is last minute. They should score. You know, it's as simple as that. Pretty close in, slight angle. But again, Leno's decision to come to set where he did and to make the save that he makes in such a crucial moment shows real clarity of mind, a really clear mind. And as you said, bravery, because the second one in particular, to have the intelligence just to palm it away in the way that he did and not go with two hands, which he could possibly have done. Again, there's so much in this save to admire. Bravery, intelligence, great shape as well, great decision-making, and a very good game for Leno.
And lastly, you've got to feel for Marine goalkeeper Bailey Passant, who, to be fair, probably had quite an enjoyable evening, even though he did ship 5 goals. That first half, crikey, there was an image of him where he just looked a bit exasperated. He courted loads of headlines for his antics in the previous round. He's only 19 years old. I think he works in Sainsbury's. Some really good articles in the build-up to this round. But Tottenham, obviously pretty convincing winners in this one. And that first half, 2 tap-ins. He made a very good save from the second one, but 2 tap-ins for Vinicius, and a smart finish as well to complete his hat trick. Other than that, it was a free kick from Lucas Moura. So, yeah, a difficult evening, but I'd imagine one heck of an experience for him. And I mentioned the fact that he made a very good save. We also had a tweet in from Evan Michael Moran, who flagged a very good save from Mark Weir of Bonnybrigg. This was in the Scottish Cup, where Bonnybrigg very, very nearly pulled off an incredible giant killing against Dundee. He made a great save from the initial header, but the follow-up was put in. It went to extra time. Dundee ended up winning the game, but one of those classic cases of making the save but seeing the follow-up go in.
Yeah, I felt for him, because it was a fantastic save on the line. I don't know how he saved it, if truth be told, because it's one of those where it's on the line, it looks like it's in, then he's managed to kind of claw it out, getting a full hand to it, just about scoops it out. And it's one of those moments you're just praying that somehow it evades a strike or someone can help you out and clear it. You know, very slightly reminiscent of the David Seaman save against Pesky Salido. Of course, Seaman, the brilliance to get it around Pesky Salido and get it away. Arguably one of the best saves ever seen in an FA Cup. And there was a slight similarity in the fact that he's managed to scoop it out on the goal line, but unfortunately for him, didn't have the luck of someone else clearing it or wasn't quite able to get it far enough away. But a very unfortunate moment, because it was a fantastic initial save.
Okay, so I know I may have said "and lastly" with regards to that FA Cup action, but there is indeed one more game to comment on. We recorded this episode as the tie between Newport and Brighton was happening, and typically we banked on no major talking points taking place. How foolish we were. Cue the 96th minute and Newport's equaliser, courtesy of Jason Steele not gathering that cross, a bunch of brilliant Tom King saves, and then, of course, the rather eventful penalty shootout. This cheeky interlude has been slipped in post-edit, so you've got me and next Richard in WhatsApp form offering his verdict. Ever the professional, there might be a slight tweak in sound, but hopefully it will do the job. Richard, over to you.
Yeah, what a fantastic game and lots of goalkeeping talking points at Newport. I think I'll start with Jason Steele, because I can actually really appreciate what he went through in that I had a very, very similar game. My last ever game I played, I touched on this way too many times on this podcast, but I made a couple of mistakes in the game, went to a penalty shootout, and then ended up winning the penalty shootout. And it's funny, it's kind of mixed emotions that you tend to get, but it does take a certain amount of mental toughness to pick yourself up after you've made an error and, you know, to break down the error itself. Look, it wasn't a great moment for him. He's caught in two minds, it looks like. Doesn't know whether to catch or punch. Misses it completely. And obviously the ball ending up in the net in the final minute. Really tough thing to deal with. But then to pick yourself up for the shootout, especially when the other goalkeeper has been as good as he had been during the game, takes a lot of mental toughness to make the number of saves he did in the shootout. Good saves too.
you know, huge credit to him. And then to mention Tom King, you know, who's had a difficult season, not necessarily through his own doing. Nick Townsend's been excellent and obviously really locked down that number one shirt. But Tom King, again, showing that he is, in my opinion, better than a League Two keeper. But again, sometimes circumstances just don't work in your favour. But yesterday has really given him a platform to show just how good he is. I mean, you know, I can mention several saves. I'll certainly touch on the first one. Back on himself, comes across the line. The agility shown to get back on himself, the awareness to get a hand and get it up over the bar. The technique is brilliant. The save as well in extra time up to his left. Big, strong hand, great power in order to get there. Again, another brilliant save. And again, you know, he saved a couple in the shootout, so there's nothing more he could have done on a personal level. Certainly, he's going to come out of this with plenty of plaudits. Just always frustrating when you have a game like that and you're not able to get the victory and go through to the next round. But I think from Tom King's point of view, you know, he's in and around the Welsh squad as well. He's certainly done himself no harm last night.
Right, just to wrap up the rest of the action from the EFL, there's a game I want to touch on, which at the Stadium of Light involving Sunderland and Hull City. Now, Lee Burge was in goal for Sunderland. He was taken off at half-time. He received a bit of a knock to the head in a what would appear to have been a 50-50 collision with Hull's Malik Wilkes. He stayed on the pitch. He then conceded shortly after from a free kick that he spilled. He didn't look like he was in the best of shape. Now, we don't know whether Lee Burge was actually suffering with concussion. It might have just been an eyesight issue. But we spoke about concussion with David Lucas on the podcast about a year ago. David Lucas, the now goalkeeper coach at Fleetwood Town. And he spoke at length about his experience of concussion and how it affected him, not straight away, but after the initial incident. Here's what he had to say.
I was knocked out cold, and my full recollection was, right, the ball's gone out for a corner, I best get up now. And as I've gone to get up, which seemed to me like seconds, a voice suddenly said to me, don't move, you've got a neck brace on. So there was, I think there was a gap of about 10 minutes in there somewhere. To be fair, I remember being in the ambulance, going to the hospital and thinking, I could play on it. And I actually felt okay. I think we had sort of a family do that night in Preston. I actually went there and seemed pretty compass-mentous. But then, honestly, guys, the next 10 days was the darkest time of anybody's life. I was literally bedridden for 10 days. Mm-hmm. It was, if there was more than two people speaking at one time, it just was sensational. And I actually tried to play. I played probably 2 weeks later at Walsall away, and I was fine in the warm-up. This is Walsall away where there's probably 2,000, 3,000 people, and I just needed to get off the pitch. I ended up coming off after about 15 minutes because I just could not process what was going on. It was seemed such a... And looking back, I always thought to myself, after it, why have you come off there? Have you chucked it? You know, that sort of old school sort of... Have you bottled it? That sort of thing. But it was just, you know, your mental state just was not normal at the time. When I look back and sort of try and rationalise it, it was horrible. So that's when, you know, when you hear about concussions now, I think safety is the number one priority when it comes to those sort of things.
Well, this is
from my own personal experience. Before that, I would have been like, you're fine, you know, you're fine a day later or something like that. But it was the aftermath, not the actual incident, that was the worst for me. It was horrible. I just could not face going out of the bedroom. Mm. It was lucky that it was probably, I think it was around, it was December time, so it didn't really get light outside. So that probably aided me in staying, you know, locked away and on my own because of, you know, the darkness. But I'm not going to say I had little kids at the time, but when they'd come into the bedroom, it was like the need to go away from me. It was just like, dude, I couldn't make sense of it, you know, what they were saying to me at times.
So that was David Lucas, Rich, talking about his concussion. I will reiterate the fact that we don't know that is what Lee Burge had, but there has been a lot of chat about concussion recently, and there is a concussion protocol that apparently is trying to be pushed through by the Football League, by the Premier League, by the FA. It didn't come in for the FA Cup third round. They reckon it might be in for the FA Cup fourth round. But Lee Burge conceded that goal for Sunderland after he'd taken a knock to the head. He was then replaced at half-time by Remy Matthews. Should he have been replaced earlier?
I mean, look, it's obviously very difficult to say because my guess is if it's not concussion, then naturally in the moment, the goalkeeper's going to want to carry on. Well, look, watching this moment, it didn't quite look right. Obviously, the technique he's used in order to catch the cross wasn't the correct technique at that moment and spilt it. They scored. The reaction afterwards was almost if he had checked out. That's the expression I would use. Like, it wasn't one where he was annoyed with himself. He just kind of walked back to his goal. It was a very strange moments. I would say he didn't quite look right. But again, if it isn't concussion and he said, I want to play on, then of course you've got to go with how the goalkeeper looks, feels, etc. Now, it might just be one of them. And this does happen where, now look, the first half hasn't gone exactly how he would have wanted. He did make a good save after that, in fairness, but it hasn't gone exactly how he wanted. So it might have been one of them where he's coming at half-time, he's a bit deflated, he's got a cut, he's not feeling great, and he's just said, look, do you know what? It's probably best for the team if Remy Matthews comes on for the second half. That might have happened. And I guess this is the bit, we just got to be a little bit careful to speculate. But just touching on the goal itself, it didn't quite look right. You know, he is a very, very good goalkeeper. The technique that he's used wasn't great. And it was just the reaction thereafter that was a little bit odd, let's say.
Okay, we'll touch on the situation at Swindon as well now, because Matej Kovar has gone back to Manchester United. Now, the official line from Manchester United is that he has been recalled. Mark Travers, the Bournemouth goalkeeper, has come in to replace him on loan. Made a very good save in their win at Ipswich at the weekend. It ended up 3-2 for Swindon. But this situation is funny, because when we did the review of 2020, I forgot to mention Mark Travers and the fact that he's on the bench at Bournemouth. He received a few rave reviews, didn't he, when he made his debut for Bournemouth in that draw or victory, I think it was, over Tottenham. He's not really had much of a look in since. And I thought, is it beneficial to Mark Travers to be number two at Bournemouth at his young age that he is? Or should he be going out on loan? Lo and behold, a few weeks later, he's on loan at Swindon.
Yeah, look, this is fantastic for Mark Travers. Exactly what he needs, because he's hugely rated by Bournemouth. There was a shout that it looked likely that he was going to start this season. Of course, he did play that first game. It didn't quite go to plan on a personal level. And in fairness to him, Asmir Begovic has stepped in. And of course, he's done what Asmir Begovic does. So it's going to be very, very difficult to get ahead of Asmir unless Asmir were to get injured or sent off or what have you. So I think credit to Bournemouth, and they've seen the long-term picture with Mark Travers and haven't gone down what I'd consider or call the selfish route, which could be to keep a very good keeper there as a number two. Now, one of the big things, if Mark Travers is going to reach his potential, and again, so much said about him, he does need to be playing football. You know, I use the example of Dean Henderson and Freddie Woodman. Freddie Woodman being ahead of Dean Henderson a few years ago in the England reckoning, certainly. And then, of course, Dean Henderson getting all the loans that he got, whereas Freddie Woodman held back for quite a period of time. And of course, now he's making up for lost time at Swansea. You are then a year or two behind the likes of a Dean Henderson. Similarly for Mark Travers, if they do see him as their number one, which of course they do, he needs to be out playing regular football. Now, what Bournemouth will do, I'm not too sure, because at the moment they've got Asmir Begovic. They haven't got a recognised number two. They've got some excellent young goalkeepers there, don't get me wrong, but they haven't got a recognised number two as it stands. So it'll be interesting to see how that materialises. But certainly for Mark Travers, this is perfect. And it's quite a big challenge as well, because Swindon, of course, having a tough season, although for him personally, an excellent start. To get a win away at Ipswich in your first game, very, very good.
Just a quick word on Kovar as well. It was 41 goals in the 20 games that he played for Swindon Town. This is a learning curve, really, for him, I suppose, isn't it? And reading between the lines, I think he might have struggled with the tough love that he would have received from Swindon's goalkeeper coach, Steve Mildenhall, just reading some of those quotes. And he actually came out on social media, Kovar, and said, "My time came earlier than I thought it would. And personally, I think this is the best way for both sides. I know I didn't show the quality I'm capable of, but I'll take it as a big lesson from which I'll learn."
Yeah, look, he had a tough time, and it's not easy. This is why, and again, it feels like it's a bit of a theme of this podcast, that it's one of the biggest things I recommend for keepers to get out and play games, because it's tough. Do you know what? When I dropped from Watford in the Championship to Brentford in League One, you know, I kind of had this illusion at the time that you'd make the dropper level and suddenly it would be that much easier. It's not at all. If anything, you're dealing with different things going down a couple of levels that you wouldn't necessarily deal with if you're playing in goal for Manchester United or playing for the under-23s or whatever it may be. So I'm glad that he's looking at it like that, because that's exactly how he needs to look at it. Realistically, they need to get him out on loan again, in my opinion. So again, he can have more of these experiences and continue to grow through them. The good thing that he's got, and there's many examples of this over the years, is that he's got a safety net in Manchester United, because you see the amount of goalkeepers that might make a move such as this on a permanent nature, and suddenly you can lose your place and you can go from being at a Manchester United to suddenly being on the bench at the bottom end of League One, your reality can change very, very quickly. Now, from his point of view, perhaps he looks at someone like a Robert Sanchez, who, for those that remember, he went to Forest Green on his first loan. And it went okay, but certainly not brilliant. Made a few errors, ended up going back to Brighton. But of course, look at him now, a couple of years later, or a few years later, and he's now first choice in the Premier League. So things can change very quickly. But certainly, my advice to him, for what it's worth, would be to get yourself out there again, get yourself back on the bike and go again.
Forgot to mention Michael Cooper, by the way, in the FA Cup roundup. Great save in Plymouth's win over Huddersfield Town. And a first clean sheet for Burton. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's first game back at the Brewers. He said that he wanted clean sheets. He made a change in goal. Ben Garrett replaced Kieran O'Hara. He did bag a clean sheet. It was their first of the season against Gillingham. In fact, it was their first clean sheet since they beat Gillingham back in February 2020. He also made a huge save again, right at the death from Akinde.
Yeah, excellent save. Yeah, we've got to touch on this. And as you mentioned, a huge clean sheet. Certainly to get a win like that and a clean sheet straight away, very, very good for Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank in particular. You touched on the Michael Cooper save as well. Need to highlight that because it was a brilliant save under the bar. How he got fingertips to it to get it over the bar was beyond me. So excellent save from Michael Cooper. And actually, we didn't touch on the save that Mark Travers made in the game against Ipswich. Just want to touch on that as well before I forget. Again, it was Alan Judge that was coming in only a few yards out, but Mark Travers did well to come out, narrow the angle, spread very big, and actually hit his toe pretty much as it ends up ricocheting around the post. It was a really, really good save.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
A couple of classic keeper capers elsewhere in Europe, Richard. First, we're going to France and Ligue 1, Brest v Nice. Gauthier Lassonneur, the Brest goalkeeper, with quite the unorthodox clearance.
Yeah. When I was sent this, I didn't think it was real or I couldn't figure out where it was from. But then when I heard of the level at which this has happened, I've never, ever seen anything like this before. I actually loved his reaction afterwards, though, when he collapses on the ball soon after, the fact that he was smiling and he could see the funny side. But just an incredible moment that, you know, obviously not a great first touch, the desperation to try and clear it. And just a comedy of a situation, the way in which it's hit the bar, post, come out, ends up then going nicely into his graph. Just an incredible situation. I guess the positive is that he saved himself a corner.
And they won 2-0. So there you go. Doesn't matter, does it? It is consigned to the history books. And in Portugal, Daniel Guimarães, the Brazilian who plays for Nacional, absolutely horrendous conditions in their game with Sporting. This was so brilliant, so funny, because this went out on our Twitter at GK Union and so many people responding going, yep, that is me down the park on a Sunday morning. It was flooded with mud.
Yeah, it brings back memories of getting in my dad's car as a youngster, caked in mud, ruining car after car. But yeah, you just don't see it in professional football anymore. But it's kind of refreshing in a weird way that it does still happen, even at the highest level.
I've got one more. We've forgotten to mention it, Rich. We're going to finish on a commentary corner, but we're going to brush past it because Ken Griffiths and Jack Dixon have both tweeted us in. It was to do with Darren Fletcher, the BT Sport commentator in Manchester United's win over Watford on Saturday evening. Jack Dixon has written, commentator, Henderson gets himself lost in no man's land. What actually happened? Henderson quickly reduces angle for striker to hit the goal, spreads and makes a save with his leg.
Well, there you go.
What a way to finish. Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!